You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Today's episode is going to be covering something I've been talking about now for a long time, and I just wanted to have a slice in my entire podcast specifically about this, having other dogs into the home and the idea that your dog needs to be friendly with other dogs and or your training is failing because your dog doesn't like other dogs. And we're going to dive into that today. It's going to be a singular podcast with just me. There's not going to be a guest or a client. So I hope you guys enjoy this. I'm coming to Portugal, and I'm also coming to the Seattle, Washington area this year. So far, those are the only two seminars that I have announced. All of the information is in the description below. You guys can check it out in the podcast description. Tickets are still available. Washington area is completely sold out for working spots, but we do have audit spots where you can come and hang out. So hopefully we can see you guys there and chat and meet each other. And I'm excited to come to Porto, Portugal as well. Let's get down to the topic of discussion on today's podcast, which is going to be if your dog does not like other dogs, it has nothing to do with your training. It has nothing to do with you being a good dog owner or your dog loving you or you loving your dog. It has to do with your dog's personality. And your dog's personality and your dog's training are two separate things. If your dog doesn't like other dogs or doesn't like your new dog, there is some things that you can do to help the process go as smoothly and successfully as possible, but it's not a guarantee that if your dog is nicely trained or your dog loves you, that they're going to like other dogs. And that's just facts, and that's just the reality of having animals in general. Just like we don't like other people, dogs don't necessarily love every other dog that they meet. Now, if you have a dog that is wiggle butts, jiggling when they see other dogs and they're sitting there and they're excited, that's something that you can always ride out and know that your dog is going to be completely fine with other dogs and just be glad that you have that dog. And if you don't have that dog, then this episode and this podcast is definitely going to be for you. But just understand that I think a lot of dog owners get very hard on themselves. I just talked to a dog owner on the phone that basically said, hey, look, I brought home this new dog and my new dog is getting into fights with my older dogs and my older dogs are picking on this puppy. They're trying to hurt the puppy. What do we do? If you have a dog that is not 100% wiggle butts and loves other dogs and drops and play bows every dog that they see, there's certain protocols that you must take in order for the introduction stages to go as smoothly as they possibly can. But again, there's no guarantee. Just because you have a trained dog and just because your dog loves you does not mean that your dog, or if your dog even likes other dogs, you have to make sure that if your dog is in that gray area of unknowing, that you do everything you can possibly to introduce the dogs safely. And so first thing that we always do is use a fence. And that's something that introducing dogs to a fence is a very safe process to do. There is a barrier, so sure, it could create frustration. But if you have that gray area dog where you're just unsure of how things are going to go, that's a great place to start. That way, if the dogs like each other, you can take the next step and remove the fence or let the dogs in the area together and play and or hopefully play. But if it doesn't go good and maybe you get snarls and growls and barks and even lunges, then no harm, no foul. You remove the dogs and you try something else. So the fence is a great way to introduce dogs if you're unsure of how things are going to go. Outside of that, neutrality is really important. I talk to so many dog owners that it blows their mind when I talk about socialization is neutrality and neutrality is socialization. We typically think as dog owners that socialization means that we have to go downtown to the park or the doggy daycare or go to the local brewery where all the dogs are wearing their handkerchiefs and playing and having a good time and things are good. That is a part of socialization for sure, but it's not all aspects of socialization. For dogs, all they need to be is around another dog. They have incredible sense. They have incredible hearing. They know the dog well before they go up and meet them. We as humans oftentimes force dogs to meet sometimes when they want to, but a lot of times when they don't want to. And then we scratch our head when something bad happens or there's an altercation during the meet when really they didn't want to go meet each other in the first place. Here's a great way to know if your dog wants to go meet another dog. Again, dogs have incredible smells. They see another dog, they smell the other dog, and they're sitting there and they're wiggling their butt and they're having a good time. That's a pretty good indicator that your dog is wanting to go meet this other dog or any other dog. If your dog is looking past the dog, ignores the dog, avoids the dog, maybe moving to the right of you instead of the left, and really trying to get away from the situation, that's a good indicator that your dog does not want to meet this other dog. And it's best that you just tell the person, hey, my dog's in training. My dog's a little nervous. We're going to go ahead and keep going, and or just keep going and don't make eye contact with the dog owner. So these are indicators that you can tell if your dog is going to be good or bad. Now, if you live in a city and you live in an area where you're constantly surrounded by the passing of other dogs, which is quite often the majority of you guys listening to this podcast or watching this video, and it's inevitable that you're going to run into other dogs, but you just have the safety protocols to make sure that you know what to do. If a dog is passing, you're going to move your dog on the other side. You're going to keep going without making eye contact with the owner, not engaging into, hey, can our dogs play? And even if they do, hey, can our dogs meet? You just simply say, oh no, my dog isn't good with other dogs. Or you just say, no, my dog's in training. But oftentimes dog owners who have dogs who are super friendly forget that all other dogs aren't friendly like theirs. And so you have to have a lot of empathy and understanding and sometimes even patience with other dog owners because they just assume that every dog is like their wiggle butt dog, or they've never seen a reactive dog, or they've never seen a dog that doesn't care for other dogs. So yes, it's disrespectful and downright rude sometimes when dogs just let their dogs go up to yours, but they really don't have any idea that any dog that's walking outside is not as friendly as theirs. They just assume that that's the case. I've even run into situations where dog owners have told my clients that their dog shouldn't even be allowed outside if their dog isn't friendly. And I'm sure you guys, if you have a reactive dog, have encountered these things, unfortunately. And the reality is education. These people have no idea that a reactive dog is not a mean dog. It's not a dog that wants to kill everything. It just means that they're reacting to another dog in their surrounding and they don't know how to handle it and they don't know what to do. And it doesn't mean that they're mean and they want to kill everything. Because to be quite honest with you guys, I work with behavioral dogs and aggressive dogs and reactive dogs my whole life professionally. And the majority of dogs who actually don't like other dogs are the silent ones. They just go for it, right? If you have a reactive dog, just know that not everybody's going to assume that, you know, your dog is just a scared, fearful dog that really wants the other dog to go away and get out of the situation. And so having good obedience is really, really important when you guys have a reactive dog, because really what it comes down to is obedience is control and communication. So if you don't have good obedience, replace obedience with communication. And then ask yourself, okay, Tom, I have a reactive dog with a behavioral issue that was set up through genetics or past trauma or neglect when they were younger, whatever the case is, and you don't have good communication. So I always tell my dog owners, when you have a dog, replace obedience with communication in your head and ask yourself, do you have good communication with your dog? If you don't have good communication or obedience with your dog, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to get your dog to do anything you don't want them to do and or you want them to do. You have friends come over, your dog's jumping on them. You don't have an off, you don't have a place, you don't have a stay. You can't assume that your dog is just going to make good decisions, and you can't let your dog do these things because it ultimately makes your dog look bad. And on the opposite end is if you have a reactive dog and you go outside, you're out for a walk, your dog sees another dog, they start to build and whine and ears perk up and they're jumping on their back end and the whole nine and they're barking and they're lunging and they're spinning. You're stressed, you're sweating, the other people are running away, cursing you out. You really have to audit and ask yourself, how good is your communication with your dog? And the way that I usually put it that way, and I ask you, okay, you don't have good communication skills with your dog. How are you going to teach your dog how to behave when they're overly stimulated? crickets usually. Dog owners don't really think about these things and bring things into consideration when they have a reactive dog. They just assume, oh, this is how my dog is. It very well may be how your dog is, but it's your job as a dog owner to understand where this is coming from, but also how to help your dog emotionally respond different to their surroundings like other dogs. Another dog pops into the picture, boom, your dog explodes. That's unhealthy for a dog to live. They're living a very, very stressful life, and of course you are too, and you're limiting the amount of things that you can do with your dog. So your dog is only really living 20% of their life with you. And when I put things into perspective that way, when I'm like, you can't go to the coffee shop, you can't go on hikes, you can't go to the beach, you can't go for a basic walk at normal hours of time without sweating and stressing out and really making it a big deal. And I even know some clients that literally don't even walk their dogs ever because they can't figure out reactivity. And as you guys know, I have hundreds of videos absolutely for free on YouTube. I have podcasts with hundreds of episodes talking to real dog owners with real problems, giving real solutions. So really, I have tons of services. You can work with me online. You can online consult with me. You can come into the facility. There's so many different options for people who have a reactive dog. But I will say, from a dog training standpoint and an expert in behavior, if you have a reactive dog, it's not just going to go away. And you working in the or working your dog in the middle of the night or early in the morning or hiding behind cars is not going to help how your dog feels. Your dog is going to live in a very stressful emotional state for the rest of their lives unless you make drastic changes. And if you are actually working with a dog trainer for your dog reactivity, you really should be looking for a human coach, somebody like myself who does education. My out-of-state program, my seminars, I very rarely will handle the dog. And in accumulation, I may handle the dog for less than 15 minutes over a course of 3 days because I'm focusing so much on the dog owner. And that's the system that allows me to be successful. I had a dog owner come in this last weekend with an intact genetic mess, 15-month-old working line German Shepherd, and she couldn't even talk in the same room with me. She went through my out-of-state program or my 3-day transformation program, and by the end of it, she had her dog in a downstay watching other dogs pass in group class with minimal or zero reactivity or barking. Now, the dog owner was really happy with that progress and really happy with the results of being able to have a conversation with somebody in the room. But for me, and I told her this like often throughout the process, I said, your dog's mental health is getting so much better. So the point of this podcast is to really talk about the idea that your dog may not come into this world ideal. Your dog may come into this world with stress. Your dog may come into this world with anxiety because of their mom's living situation and the way that they were born and how they were born and their genetics and their back history. So whenever you hear a dog trainer or a dog professional talk about genetics, it's the same genetics that we have. If your mom is 7 feet tall and your dad is 8 feet tall, there's a good chance you're going to be tall. Now, if your dog's mom was born on the street, dog dad, you don't even know where the heck that came from, right? You don't even know where the dog's dad is. And then all of their ancestors and genetics before that were living on the street. There is a solid chance that puppy is going to be born with stress, anxiety, fear, resource guarding because they have to fight for their food. And that's the thing is like people will adopt these dogs from these islands and these street dogs and they have sometimes severe resource guarding issues because they've been fighting for their food the whole time. They have a hard time on the leash because they've never been leashed. They have a hard time settling in a house because they've never settled in a house. They've never seen carpets. They've never seen kids. And it is a good thing to rescue some of these dogs in these situations. But honestly, it's almost better for these dogs to stay on the streets because that's where they're going to be happier. You're taking an animal that is feral and like a coyote or a wolf and putting them into your home and expecting things to work out. So if you do have those types of dogs, it's also important to maintain an extreme amount more training than the average person. But at the end of the day, like I just got a puppy and my older Dutch Shepherd, Lakota, who's 8, she's a working line dog. She's been a puppy her whole life within my pack. My other 2 dogs, my older dogs, had passed away in the last couple years, and she's never had a puppy living with her ever. So this has been really challenging for her. She's corrected the puppy a handful of times, which has been great because he's going to grow up to be this big, burly dog, no pun intended. And I really do want him to fear her a little bit. I want him to be under her thumb a little bit, as the same for me. I really want him to know when I say something, he's going to have to do it, because the reality is this dog is going to be bigger than me, stronger than me, and outweigh me. And he needs to understand and know throughout this dog's genetics and his life that he knows that I am ultimately in charge, and he's not going to second guess what I say, because if he wanted to, he could. But it's all mental for the dogs. And some of you might be saying, like, we hear these things all the time about fear-free and force-free training. And to be honest with you, fear is a really healthy, a small amount of fear is a really healthy way to gauge your relationship with anything, right? Like, if you don't fear something, like if I didn't fear the police officer when I'm going 85 when I should be going 30, or if I didn't, my mom looked at me a certain way and I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Like, these are healthy things that have been baked into our lives for a really long time. But I oftentimes see these force-free and fear-free dog training camps and these dog training groups where people are saying these things. And the reality is that is all farce. That is all a marketing manipulation thing that they're trying to push. If you ever see that, if you ever see the force-free and or fear-free training, I want you to understand that it could be just their marketing techniques. It could also just be their lack of education of how canine behavior works. But if you market force-free dog training and you put a leash on a dog, you are by far not even close to force-free. And the opposite side of that, if you're a dog trainer that's forcing dogs to do things against their will that isn't going to create an unhealthy solution or an unhealthy end game, then yeah, you shouldn't be training dogs anyway. You know, but to force your, so anyway, I can go into that, you know, really deep. I'm not going to, but it's the same thing with like fear-free dog training. It's kind of the same envelope of marketing manipulation and really pulling on the heartstrings of dog owners to get attention. They say, you know, who wouldn't want force-free and fear-free dog training for their dog? Of course we love our dogs, but I just want to let you guys know as dog owners that you don't fall for these marketing manipulation words, these trigger words, these headline words, because fear-free is it sounds great, but at the end of the day, like if you tell your dog to come back, I want a little bit of fear that they say, oh, I'm going to come back because I don't want to get in trouble. Or if I tell my dog to heal, I want my dog to know, like, I'm going to heal because I know heal and I like to heal and I've been rewarded for heal. But I also want in that sequence somewhere that they don't want to mess up because they don't want to get in trouble, right? And that's just, that is discretionary and very subjective to training. So I'm not saying that force-free and fear-free isn't something that you can't sign up for. I just want to let you know what the realities are, right? If your dog doesn't fear you a little bit, then that's probably going to be a problem if they want to do something against what you said, because they don't fear anything. They don't fear you at all. You say heel, they see a squirrel, they go. These are the realities of animals. These dogs are prey-driven, savage killers sometimes. Not the pug hanging out on the couch, but if you have a dog that wants to do something and they have absolutely zero fear of getting in trouble from you, that's ultimately going to be a problem in the fear-free reality, right? So again, my mom looked at me a certain way sometimes and I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll take out the trash. My bad, right? And it's the same thing with force-free. Again, you put a leash on a dog and they go one way and you want them to go the other way, or you just hold on, you are forcing your dog to do something. So these are all just marketing manipulation terms that have been thrown around for dog owners to subscribe to because they feel bad, because who wouldn't want force-free and force-free and fear-free training? It's just, it's all marketing, right? So as long as we understand that and we know what it is, it's important to move forward, then you can make a decision on what you want to do. But at the end of the day, I don't know how I got into that rabbit hole, just the personality of a dog, like with Lakota and Burley, that's how I got into that. It's important to understand, like, I do want Burley to fear her a little bit because he is going to be 200 pounds of muscle walking around my house. I don't want him to have zero fear because that means he's going to rule the house because he doesn't care if he gets in trouble or he doesn't, right? And the other thing is her correcting him at this age is hopefully going to negate any problems of them in the future when he is 200 pounds. So when she corrects him and she tells him what to do and what not to do, that's an appropriate thing to do, and I'll allow that to happen under my watch as long as she's fair about it. Now, if she was taking him and making him bleed and puncturing him several times and shaking him and really trying to hurt him and constantly going after him, that's a completely separate thing from correcting a dog. But just know that there is a significant difference between your dog correcting a dog and also punishing a dog for something and also for attacking a dog. Like when a dog attacks another dog, it is a very violent thing, and they actually want to kill the dog. They won't let go. You have to choke them off. You have to do everything you can to get them off. A dog that corrects another dog is typically a one and done, quick little pinch and snap and press down and pin down. The other dog screams and runs away, and then it's over. And it's just to teach the dog something like, hey, this is mine, or I'm done playing, get away from me. But that's personality, right? So that has nothing to do with your training. So you guys probably have seen the video of Lakota correcting Burley, because Lakota was working, we were playing Frisbee, she got pissed that he kept coming over and trying to play, or she got pissed because he kept coming over around her Frisbee. It doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, she pinned him on the ground, twisted his little skin on his neck, he went crying. There was absolutely no puncture wounds or no wounds on him at all. It was just more of a fear thing for him. But what really was scary to me, and again, this is subjective in my opinion, is the amount of people, the armchair experts in the comments, saying that that's going to be detrimental to their relationship. And the reality is I hope that it is. Like, I do want Burley, my South African protective Borbal that's going to be 200 pounds, to look at my 45-pound Dutch Shepherd and go, I'm afraid of that one. I want that to happen. I don't want him to ever think, I'm just going to beat up this dog and move on. I'm going to kill this dog and move on. I want her to establish that rules and boundaries with her, because I want him to respect her, and I do want that little bit of fear. Now, there's a significant difference between fearing something a little bit that's healthy and fearing somebody when they walk into the room and they're shaking and peeing on themselves. And I think that that's the thing that gets kind of lost in the sauce in context and conversations, is when I say healthy fear, what is that defining? That's defining that, again, when I tell my son no and it scares him because he's about to grab a knife, that's healthy fear, and he cries and he runs away, but he doesn't grab the knife. Or he tries to run towards the road and I say, Banks, no, and I scream at him and he cries and he runs back, or he stops. That's healthy fear. That's, in my opinion, necessary fear. It's fear from love, if you will. And I'm throwing out all these terms, but now if I walked into the room and my son ran away because he was afraid of me, that is not okay. That is not cool. That is very, very bad fear. That is abuse fear. That is not good, right? Or when Lakota's around, like, here's the other thing too that I was going to explain in the comments to people, but I'm just doing this podcast and this video instead, is that if Burley had a PTSD traumatic event with Lakota because she corrected him, he's not going to go around her anymore. He's not going to run up and try to play with her, which is what he did 20 minutes after that event happened. And now, again, I know that as a content creator and somebody on the space, that when I post something, I'm opening myself up to all this emotional charge from people who have no idea the context, no idea who I am, and no idea really about dog behavior. And that's just how that goes. And that's okay. And I don't really care about that. But I want people who actually are interested in dog behavior, learning more about context about these situations, learning more about how things work with my particular pack, because that's what matters to me. And that's like the real thing, guys, is like understanding that when you're working with dogs, you do want to have that very healthy balance of, hey, if you don't do something, or if you do something, there's consequences for these things. But over time, the most sustainable training I have seen has been that type of mindset, that type of structure. Like, if you correct a dog for doing something, I just posted a video on my Instagram the other day. We had this really squirrely, friendly dog. Dog's name is Carib, in my 3-day transformation thing. And she was just all over the place. And I dropped a piece of food and I corrected her because she lunged at it. And I told her to leave it, right? So that correction and that leave it, she was like, whoop, okay, I didn't like that. That's the point, right? That's the other interesting thing, when I find so many people talk about how prong collars can be uncomfortable for dogs. E-collars can be uncomfortable for dogs. I'm like, yeah, they can be. And to be honest with you, that's kind of the objective to that process in the first place, but they're not always. And that's the important thing. If I put a prong collar and an e-collar on a dog and I was constantly carrying them around and correcting him with it, that would be downright abusive and I'd be in jail and I wouldn't be operating this huge international company, right? But what happens when you use some of these tools to teach dogs what boundaries are, you get a healthier, balanced dog on leash and off leash. And that's just been my experience over the more than a decade that I've been working with dogs. And it's been really, really helpful to millions of dog owners. So I can say that that is not anything that's subjective. That is objectively something that you can do with dogs. And there's huge success. And there's millions of people who have trained like that, that have had success with that. Now, opinions aside, whether you agree with that or disagree with that, that's another thing, right? But going down that hole of your dog having those respects and boundaries is really important conversation. And I just want you guys to know the context of that. So anytime you see somebody or even myself post something about fear or talking about fear, we have to keep it in context. And hopefully this podcast can really help you guys and show you guys the context of what that means. When I say you want a little bit of fear, that's what that means. That doesn't mean when you walk into the room, the dog pees and runs away, or the dog is shying away from you. That's abusive fear. Like, that's not okay. But you know, there's a spectrum on everything with every piece of emotion. And I think we as humans can really, you know, all agree on that. Like, there's different types of friendships and different types of love and different types of, there's so many different things. And we can't just say fear and be like, oh, fear is bad. Like, what do you mean? What kind of fear? Like, oh, love. Okay. What kind of love? Is it obsessive love? What is it? What are we talking about? So anyway, so if you have a dog that does, you know, this is the beauty of podcasting, right? We kind of go down these rabbit holes. But if you have a dog that doesn't necessarily love other dogs, I've given you guys a couple of different options on how to solve these issues and how to work through these issues. But just know that if you have good obedience and you have a dog that's in that gray area, things are going to be a lot easier because you can communicate and you can control your dog in these situations to make things better. Now, if you don't have control, that is going to be, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle. Anytime that anybody has a behavioral problem with zero communication skills, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle for a long time. So it is important to understand that. And it also is important to highlight when a dog's personality does not like other dogs or is uncomfortable with puppies jumping on them, that's their personality. And I wouldn't even be suggesting like finding, I don't want to say that. I guess I should say, when you're going through this, I want you to just understand that, okay, this is my dog's personality. This is how they are as a dog. This is their own unique traits. They don't like other dogs. Okay, can we coexist? So if your dog doesn't like other dogs, that does not mean you can't go to other places. That just means that you can't go to dog parks. You shouldn't. That means that when you're around other dogs, you have to be protective and advocate for your dog because there's a good chance somebody's going to let their dog rush up to yours. And to be honest with you, if you have a reactive dog or a dog that doesn't love other dogs, you're going to likely just be kind of isolated because the amount of people there, it's going to be 100 to 1. 100 people is not going to have control over their dog to that one person. And it sucks because the people who have good obedience and have good training and have a really obedient, well-mannered dog are not going to be able to do things because of other people's disobedient and out of control dogs. That's the way it works. You're out for a walk or let's say you're at a coffee shop. Your dog is in a down state. I see this all the time in airports. I travel a lot. I see this all the time all over the world. You're out for dinner. You're out at a coffee shop. Your dog is in a down state. They're obedient. They're minding their business. They're laying on their side. They may even be sleeping. You have good control over your dog. You have good obedience over your dog. Whether your dog likes other dogs or even other people or not has nothing to do with the equation because your dog is listening to you and your dog is under control from you. You control everything. And then you get a dog that sits down, that is jumping on their back ends and barking for spaghetti and spinning around and barking when people come over. And they're just sitting there and they're talking to their friend and they're texting and they're sending emails. And then the dog comes up to your dog and sniffs them and tries to play. And then your dog snaps and there's this whole thing and your dog was just chilling and sleeping. And now the other person is calling you out for that. And that is so backwards. And I think this message and hopefully this piece of information is going to be helpful to the millions of people who think that that's acceptable, and to the people who think that that is actually the dog's fault that is sleeping that snapped, when actually it's your fault because you didn't control your dog and you didn't put the time in with your dog to be successful. Do not bring your dog to public places that's out of control and disobedient, and then have your dog do something absolutely out of pocket and then yell at the person for reacting or the dog for reacting to that crazy energy. That's your fault. If you have an untrained dog and you go out into the public place, you better just put your dog in your little purse and then walk away. Don't let your dog go up to other dogs and be malicious and start problems, because ultimately it's your fault, because your dog is unhealthy up here and your dog is untrained on the leash, and you haven't just spent the time to create that healthy relationship with your dog. So again, hopefully this podcast has been helpful for you guys, and we're going to be putting some more out this week. So thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to head over to the iTunes review chart and leave a review, if you have a question, I will answer it in the next podcast. Just go to the iTunes review chart, leave a review and your question in there, and we'll answer it next time. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope this has been helpful. It's something that I don't think a lot of professionals talk about. And in fact, dog trainers don't talk about these things because they're afraid of the general population and what they're going to say. But the reality is I don't care. Like, my job is to help dog owners and help dogs in general all over the world. And I'm telling you, like, having a trained dog going out in public that doesn't like other dogs is appropriate and safe, as long as you're advocating for them. And also understanding that having good balance and good training with your dog is something that everybody should be doing. So it's probably an unpopular opinion because people just want to let their dogs do whatever they want. They think that that's good, but the dog literally lives in hell their whole life because they have no structure, boundaries, or leadership, and they are just mental their whole life. And that's really sad to see, to be honest. So thank you guys so much for watching and listening. I appreciate you guys, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.